Okay, so welcome back, class number six. And last week we talked about the theme of what's in a name, following my titles, probably the biggest theme of the Torah. I want to connect the idea of God's name with the whole concept of temple. Now, let me give an introduction why. The temple is something we don't have today, something we always pray for. But in my opinion, even if we don't have a temple, if you want to understand the meaning of shul or a synagogue or a place of worship, basically, when we go to shul, a shul is what's called a mini temple, a mikdash ma'at. So therefore, if you want to appreciate what it means to go to shul, which means what it means to daven and pray, I need to understand the concept of a mishkan to understand the concept of prayer. Now, you'll see how much sense it makes in a minute, because one of the key themes of the Siddur is God's name, Shem Hashem. We mentioned several times already. Remember, Hodu Lashem Kirul Bishmo. We mentioned that in our earlier shiurim. Of Pesukei Nisim is all about God's name. It's in Shmonesrei. It's in Al Tehillim. It's in Hallel. The idea of we're chosen to make a name for God, to make God's reputation great, and that happens how we talk and how we act. That's a key theme of what the temple is about, as we'll see today. It's a key theme of why we're chosen. And I want to use what we've studied so far to appreciate the concept of Mikdash, and hence the idea of Shul, what it means, the idea of a Beit Knesset is. And also to support the theme that I've tried to develop so far, the idea of shame in Sefer Bereshit, how it's going to relate to the theme of Mishkan and Mikdash, which becomes central to the rest of Chumash. Okay? So again, if I'll review, we're studying what's the purpose of Sefer Bereshit, what message is God giving us, and then we had a message for man, for humans in general, that they're different than animal, and they have to appreciate God giving that creativity we talked about, then what he expects from the Jewish people, to make a name for God, to make his reputation great. The idea of God's reputation, to that we need a nation forever, an eternal covenant. We'll get to that in the upcoming weeks. And because we've talked about that, and because we just read Parshat Vayetze, which should be fresh in everyone's memory, that's going to be the transition to understand the connection between God's name and the concept of Mikdash. Okay. Now, what we did last week, the end of the shiur, we went through, reviewed everything we talked about. The theme of God's shame, of calling out in God's name. So not just to mention God giving names to things and man giving names, but we talked about naming in general, but naming God, just to review quickly, it begins with God giving names for what he created, God charging man, or challenging man to give names for what God created, and then man gives a name for his wife, with his companion, and then ultimately, in that process of giving names and recognizing that there's logic, we call it species, and there's companionship. Basically, man using his brain and his create not just creative ability, his ability to think and process information, ultimately to realize there must be a God who created what we call nature. So this idea of calling out in God's name, either type of prayer or what we understood in Ramban and Sforno, making a name, not calling to God, but about God. So we said that idea being set up at the end of chapter 4 with Azu Chaldikro B'Shem Hashem. And, at the time of Enosh, which interestingly becomes a name for humankind, Enoshut. And then Noah naming his son Shem. We talked about that last week and why he calls him Shem. But he wants his son to make a name for God. And hence he called him Shem to do that. And then our genealogy of Avraham Avinu begins with Toldot Shem. And then the last story of the universal section was mankind gathering together using their creativity, the Industrial Revolution, building bricks and then a city and a tower, etc., to make a name for man, and that's Lenu Shem, in contrast to Avram being chosen to make a name for God. And then we made that big deal about this calling out in God's name here, and Azu Chalukru B'Shem Hashem in four. That was our little review, what we did so far. And then not only did Avram call out in God's name when he first arrived from Mesopotamia, he goes down to Egypt. Comes back from Egypt and goes back to what we call, remember this line in Perek Yud Gimel, when he came back from Egypt, remember, sorry about that. Yeah, it pops up again. Ad hamakom, remember the word makom, it's going to come up a lot today, right? Where he puts extent and begin between Beit El and I, to makom hamizbeach, again, where he was beforehand, and there he called out in God's name. So we had this idea of calling out in God's name over and over again. Right before the Akedah, he makes his treaty with Abimelech, remember? And he calls out in God's name. Then we talked last week about Yitzhak. Only after he reached peace with the Plishtim, he's able to go to, remember, after Esek and Sitnah, getting into all the fights and all the jealousy, finally, towards the end of his career, when the Plishtim come to him and want to make a treaty with him, just like in the time of Avraham Avinu, he again goes to Beersheba and does what Avram did, calls out in God's name. But again, only after people look up to him and he reaches peace with his neighbors, we'll see how that will be an important theme coming up. Right, now, with that in mind, I'm going to close my screen for a second and ask a question and see if people are listening. Here we go. Let's stop the share. Okay. If Avram, in his spare time, basically, on his free time, is making a name for God, which is being emphasized, and Yitzhak does the same thing, what would we expect Yaakov to do? The same thing. Right. Now, anyone remember Yaakov making a name for God? Calling out in God's name? Okay, of course not. Now, why didn't he?
In Bethel, when he dreams, the dream, he says Shem Hashem.
Okay, he'll talk about, we don't hear him calling out in God's name. We hear him talking about God. We'll see in a minute. You know, God's in his life for sure. And I'll just give, I think, a simple answer is, but I'll give the introduction to the share. And then basically, he wishes he could, but he can't. Now, I'm going to make
right.
up.
He's understand staying. The idea? He's stained. That's why he can't.
He what? He?
He's stained.
By what he by
did to Esav and before he ever meets Lava, he's already
before, okay.
Stained himself by what he did with the Bechara and then what he did with the Baracha.
Yeah.
He's in no position to be Korei B'Shem Hashem. Be a Chil Hashem if he did it.
Yeah. As we say, no good deed goes unpunished.
Right.
Yeah. So he always means well. I'll give an example. I'll go through the things. Again, this is a share on last week's parsha, on last two, but I'll save my Hishlach for later in the week. Thank you for reminding me, Rabbi Jay. What was I telling you? Yaakov always means well. I'll give an example. The whole story of selling the birthright sounds like it doesn't sound good, but it depends whether birthright, Bechora, is that about privilege or responsibility? So if it's about privilege and getting a double portion, so he's using what we call leverage. He's leveraging his brother because his brother's about to die from thirst and have to sell at any price. You know, that's you don't bargain that way. But if his brother's not dying of thirst, he's just lazy. He came up from a hard day of work, wants a beer and a remote control. And his brother says, I'll give you a beer if you sell me your birthright. And he's so, he couldn't care less about his birthright and he'll sell it for a bowl of soup. So that's the last line by Yivezei Sevet HaBchora. In other words, Yaakov wants the birthright because he cares about family leadership and Esav couldn't care less about it and he'd sell it for a bowl of soup. But that's basically, now the story, when you read it, it doesn't look so good, but you can read it that way. In other words, I can take every story, which is borderline, and make Yaakov look good. Just take the end of what we just read in the last Aliyah, in Parsha Vayetze. His argument with Lavan sounds like he's right, doesn't he? The guy put him into bed. Yaakov came empty-handed. His father-in-law put him into business, gave him his wives, gave him everything, food, borderline, everything. All his wealth is thanks to Lavan, and the guy runs away, doesn't let him kiss his daughters, his grandchildren. In Lavan's eyes, Yaakov is rotten. But from Yaakov's point of view, had he stayed, he would have been killed. You know, he had no choice. He meant well. And the one thing he actually, and the one thing that he said, oh, no one took anything, and then Rachel did take it. But he had no idea. It was his life is so sad. Because he means well, but everything seems to go wrong. And
how
that's
could
why
he mean
Chazal,
well?
They
how
compare
could he
Yaakov
mean well when his brother asks him for food and he's like, he's bargaining, you know? You know, if your brother came and asked you for food, you'd give him without asking. To compare Lavan to Esav doesn't, I don't think is right.
I'm not comparing. I'm just saying I can take each story and look at it negative and look at it positive. I'm not, what I'm getting at, let me get to my main point. What I'm getting at, I can't judge the character only based on the text itself because there's not enough information. I don't know if Esav is about to die, if he won't get a bowl of soup, or he's just lazy, right? And of course he's not about to die. He's just lazy, and he'd sell his birthright. He cares so less about his birthright, he'd sell it for a bowl of soup. And does Yaakov want it for the responsibility, the privilege? I don't know, but what Chumash does by leaving the story open, it sparks. It's a catalyst for our conversation about what's right and what's wrong. Now, the concept of Bechorah, whoa, that's such a big concept in Chumash. when it comes out of Egypt. Remember where God tells Moshe, tell Pharaoh, B'ni B'chori Yisrael. Being a firstborn in Chumash is about responsibility. And that's why Yehudah, in the end of Sefer Bereishit, gets the B'chorah, because he takes responsibility. But what I'm getting at, there's no way I can read the text itself and reach a final conclusion. But the text sparks discussion, right? And through that discussion, we don't reach conclusion whether Yaakov is a good guy or a bad guy. It says, I can read Yaakov, and there's enough information to make him look like a bad guy or make him look like a good guy. But it's through that discussion, what's the good guy, what's the bad guy, that I clarify my values. That's I think Chumash is simply a tremendous catalyst. It sparks a discussion, and that discussion turns into Torah Shabbat Peh, which is how we refine and clarify what our values are. Now, instead of looking for what happened, right, I take what's written, and that becomes a catalyst of understanding why we're chosen. That's my key point I'm trying to make all the way through. I know everyone likes to find out, everyone wants to make sure that we turn out to be great. But it couldn't be. I'm not saying we're not. I'm saying, but Chumash leaves us enough room for people to be critical. Now, there's an educational dilemma. Should you teach that to children? That's something else. Okay, Noreen, real quick, what's your question?
My question is, when he wrestles with the angel and he asks, or whoever, whatever, and he asks for the name, and they wouldn't give him the name. So how can he call out in God's name if he's not going to get the name?
That's what it means. He's asking, yeah, what's your name is. He doesn't say, I'm not giving you a name. He says, what difference does it make to you? That's a great question. That's the Sharon Parsha Vayishlach, we'll see, which we'll get to later this week. But the idea of almost everything in Yaakov's life is really complicated. That's all. That's what I want to get at. And it's such great for sparking discussion. Now, there's an educational dilemma how to teach children, right? And depending on what time period you're living in. If you're living under persecution and everyone hates you and you have to be proud that you're Jewish, you know, don't listen to their thing. Or you're a time period where you're strong and powerful and don't let your power get to your head. In other words, what educational message you use, you emphasize when you're teaching Chumash depends on the time period you're living in. It depends on the age group. But that's what's so beautiful about Chumash. It's got so much in it, but you have to always look for the mega theme and allay that mega theme to explain it. Okay, now let's get on to work with, now we get today's big topic. What I'm getting at, Yaakov never calls out in God's name. We don't hear him doing that, like Ziavot. I want to show you, he wish he could, but he can't. Now, everyone knows Yaakov's going to make a neder this week. Okay, very good. What Marilyn writes down, he's a fugitive, so he couldn't, but we'll explain why in a minute. I'm going to share with you a rabbi's joke, a shul rabbi's joke. Right? Hope I get it right. Anyone who knows the shul rabbi will understand this. The rabbi visits, you know, the sick people in the hospital, right? Dikur Cholim. So there's two deathly ill patients, right? One very wealthy, we'll call him Mr. Rothschild, and Mr. Schwartz is, barely makes a living, okay? So Mr. Rothschild says, Rabbi, pray for me, Rabbi. If I recover from this illness, I'll give $50,000 to the shul, okay? Says, okay, great. And Mr. Schwartz told him, listen, Rabbi, if I get better, I'm going to come to shul every day. I'll help make the minyan. If you need help with governance, I'll be there. As soon as I'm better, pray for me and I'll be good. Sure enough, both of them recover. The rabbi davens well, etc. And then, and sure enough, Mr. Schwartz comes to shul every morning, helps out. Okay. Mr. Rothschild, we don't hear a word from him. Comes Rosh Hashanah. Okay. The rabbi sees Mr. Rothschild in shul, says, you know, Shana Tova, how you doing? He says, I'm good. I'm glad to see you're healthy. He says, Baruch Hashem. He says, remember, Mr. Rothschild, remember when you were ill, you told me that if I get better, you know, I'll make that pledge. He says, Rabbi, I must have really been sick. Okay. Now, what's behind the joke? What's it? There's both of them make netters, both of them make vows, but there's a fundamental difference between Mr. Rothschild's vow and Mr. Schwartz's vow. What was it? Mr. Schwartz would love to come to shul tomorrow, but he can't because he's in the hospital, right? So he's saying, I wish I could do it now, but I can't. Understand? Now, Mr. Rothschild could write a check, maybe write a check. He can tell his kid to write a check. Depends on how sick he is. He can transfer the funds right away, whether he gets better or not. But he's saying, if God helps me, I'll help him. Yeah. So that's a fair weather Jew. God help me, I'll help him, right? a Jew who, what do you call it, says, I'd help you right now if I could, but I can't. As soon as I can, I will. That's a good neder. Understand the difference between the two? I'm just going to use that analogy to understand Yaakov Avinu's neder. Hope you see where I'm going with this. Now we have to get to the word shame, and let's take a look. Yaakov, God has not talking to Yaakov yet until Parshat Vayetze. Sorry, up until this week. And the first time is when his father sends him, remember, to go to Padan Aram to get a wife, and Rivka tells him to go save your life. Now, I want to follow the first Hitgalut and trace where it's coming from. Just a quick review. God spoke to Avraham Avinu when he arrived in Israel. His arrival, that leaving, Baschal Goy Gadol, remember, I'll make you a great nation, and you'll bring a blessing to other nations. I'll make your name great. And then we had, after Lot leaves, in the end of Perek Yud Gimel, he blesses him again in Beit El, again. And then in Brit Ben Abtarim, he makes him a promise. He talks to him, promises him the land again. In Brit Milah in chapter 17, after the Akedah in chapter 22. Okay. And then God tells Yitzchak, during the famine, don't go to the land because you're chosen. And he speaks to him again, after he reaches Rehovot in peace with his neighbors, and he goes to Beersheba and calls out in God's name. Those are all the times that God spoke to our ancestors about their future. Okay. God has not spoken to Yaakov yet, and therefore the first thing he needs to do is to identify himself. The question is going to be, what blessing, of all the blessings that God had given Avraham and Yitzchak, what does he repeat to Yaakov? Okay, so let's take a look. So now I'll share my screen again, and we'll take a quick look. Here we are. Okay, so we talked about, whether or not Yaakov should call in God's name. So Yaakov leaves Beersheba, that's on his way to Haran, and then pay attention to the words, Vayivga b'makom. We're going to make a big deal about the word makom again. Remember we saw the word makom in Beit El, where he built his mizbech? Okay. Vayikach me'evnei ha-makom. And he put it in front of his head. Vayishka b'makomahu. Anyone with a little bit of sensitivity to biblical style notices the word makom, it was called a keyword. Okay. He has a dream. Everyone knows the famous dream. The ladder is going up and down. I mean, not the ladder. The ladder is stationary. But between heaven and earth, and Malachim, Olim v'Yordimba, and we talked about, if you remember, in creation last week or the week before, what was missing before God made man? What was missing? Remember, there's no matar from heaven to earth, and no man from what we said we suggest was earth to heaven. It was this connection between heaven and earth is key to his dream. Now, Hashem is, remember the word Nitzav is key here also because it'll be a Matseva. Hashem is like stood upon him or above him and tells him. And God now identifies himself, Ani Hashem, the God of who? The God of Avram and Yitzchak. Now, that means that Yaakov is aware of his family tradition, because that's how God identifies himself. Just like he identified himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm the God of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Here God identifies himself as the God of Avram and Yitzchak. And the first thing he tells him is that even though you're leaving the land that you're on, I thought what you're lying on, that's exactly the same blessing that God gave Avraham Avinu upon his arrival in Israel in Shechem. The Zaracha Tenet Haaretz Hazot, almost identical. Now, so this is nothing new. This is something that's been repeated all the time. Pasuk Yudalit is special. Your Zarach, your offspring, will be like Afar Haaretz. I think we talked about Afar Haaretz last time. We've talked about it before, didn't we? Afar Haaretz, we'll return to it again. And Uforatzta, you can go out in all four directions. And then Venivruchu v'chal kom b'shpot adama, that's the first blessing to Avraham Avinu. Remember, Anlech Lech already. V'eschal Ugar Gadol, remember, I'll make your name great. And that's the last line in the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, V'nivruchu v'chal kom b'shpot adama. We talked about that last week as well. Okay, now, we're going to return to this blessing specifically, but this is something we've had before. Now, if you ask people, we talked about this, that usually, in Brit Ben Abtarim, our Zeras is like Kochvei HaShemayim. That's the famous one. We're like the stars in the sky. Or after the Akedah, we're like the stars in the sky and the sand of the sea. But Afar HaAretz, we'll see, I think we talked about, is unique to the blessing of Beit El. That was back in Perek Yud Gimel. We'll return to that in a minute. Now, the special blessing that Yaakov gets, which is unique to Yaakov because of his present situation, God says, I'm going to be with you. I'll guard you wherever you go. because you're leaving the country. And it's even though you're leaving, Vashivoticha el Adamazot, I'll bring you back to this land. Notice the word Adama again. Okay? Because I'm not going to abandon you until I've done what I promised you. In other words, what's God telling Yaakov? Even though you're leaving, you're still chosen, and I'll bring you back here. You need to go, what I like to say, to Lovin University and grow up and become the Jewish people. Okay. Now, Yaakov gets up from his dream and he says, Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, and there's God's name again. So he sees God's presence is here because God there, and now it's b'makom, here's the word makom again, b'makom hazeh, and he had no idea. And then, in fear and awe of God, this place, here we go again. And then what does he say? This is none other than the house of God and Shar Shamayim. Now, my goal today is to understand what's the connection between Beit El and Avram calling out in God's name in Beit El and the idea of Beit Elohim. I'll take it step by step. The first time we had this emphasis on the name Makom, which is definitely emphasized here, remember? That was back in Perek Yud Gimel. Was that over here? In Perek Yud Gimel, when Avram came back from Egypt, we came to the Makom in Beit El. Remember Beit El, the Makom, and Makom HaMizbeach, and he called out in God's name. So if I have the word Makom related to Avram calling out in God's name, and then when Yaakov goes to that place, we have the name Beit El again. Of course, Beit El was short for Beit Elohim. And an emphasis on the word Makom, I'm already showing a connection between God's house and a name for God. That in itself. Now, let me take a quick break here for a second and stop the share. Now, who named the city Beit El? Clearly Yaakov. In fact, we'll name it twice. But when Avram came to Beit El, Chumash tells us he was in Beit El, remember, between Beit El and Ai? But Avram didn't know it was Beit El. Avram was just, Chumash just tells us where Avram went to. In fact, we'll find out later on that Luz was the name of the city beforehand. Now, but Chumash is omniscient, of course. And what Chumash is purposely telling the reader in the first chapter about Avram Avinu, back in the beginning of Lech Lecha, why is Chumash going out of its way to tell you that Avram, highlight of his first entrance to the land of Israel, from Shechem he went to Beit El and called out in God's name, right away Chumash is setting the stage to connect it to Yaakov's dream and Yaakov's neder. Hope that's clear? Notice, the fact that Chumash goes out of his way to tell us that Avram was in Beit El, even though it wasn't named Beit El yet, and I'll try to support this in a minute when he returns to when Avram returned to Beit El after he came back from Egypt. But the fact that Chumash is calling it Beit El over and over again before it's named Beit El is telling the reader to pay attention. There's a connection between Avram's Beit El, where Avram's Mizbeach, which later becomes Beit El, and Yaakov's Neder. That's my first point, and I'll show you now inside. And trying to show you over and over again that Chumash is always setting the stage for the next story. With everything, there's a thing developing from story to story, which you have to pay attention to. Now let's go back to what Yaakov does. Oh, one last question. Yaakov saw in his dream, what did he see? He saw a ladder connecting heaven to earth. Was there anything in his dream that showed it was a temple? In other words, he says, calling it Shar Shamayim makes sense because of his dream. But there's nothing in a dream that showed a house, correct? So when Yaakov says, Ein Zekim Beit Elohim, it sounds at first like he's a prophet, right? Oh, I know one day there'll be a temple here. And that's how a lot of, Midrashic explanations say, Yaakov was a prophet. Oh, I know one day there'll be a temple here in Beit El, and of course it's Har Moriah, and it's where the Beit HaMikdash will be built. That's not Pshat and Chumash, for sure, but Midrashically it's beautiful. Like, thematically it's correct. But when Yaakov calls it, when Yaakov wakes up from his dream and says, this is a Beit Elohim, okay. Is there anything in his dream that showed him it's a Beit Elohim?
It's God's house. That's where God lives. So it's not a real house. It's a divine house. It doesn't have to be a temple. No. It's a heavenly house.
But he's down on earth, Yaakov.
Yeah, but he's looking up and he sees this is the Kvod Hashem.
That's on top of the ladder.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for a bite. I'm looking for a structure. No, I see a ladder. I don't see a house. That's all. I never heard of God needing a house.
There is no mention in the dream.
There's no mention. Now, the way I want to explain it is that Yaakov isn't saying, I'll give you another bad analogy. Hope it's okay. Hope I won't get in trouble for this one. People my age might remember growing up in the early 60s. They started building the interstate highway system. Remember those? Way back? There were so many cars already, all these intersections, you couldn't, traffic jams. So they had what's called highways, meaning roads above the main roads. And therefore, the big dream of America, you can go from coast to coast to coast, remember, without a stoplight. Okay? America in the good old days, when the first time it was great. And they were thinking for the future, et cetera. Now, as soon as a Jewish, I shouldn't say Jewish, that's not nice, okay? As soon as an entrepreneur sees plans for the interstate highway system, what's he going to do?
Howard Dunn.
What's a good entrepreneur going to do?
Make a Howard Johnson.
No, first he's going to buy land, right? He's going to buy land and build what? He's going to buy land near the highways, but especially near the intersections where highways are going to meet, okay? And what's he going to build? Will he build an ice cream store?
Or yes. Build a shul.
So someone small thinking would say a gas station.
Gas station, exactly.
Yeah, a gas station. But what's called a Jewish would say, build a shopping mall. Now, nowadays, I can change it now. I'll build an Amazon distribution center. But back then, there was no Amazon. But back then, why? Because there's a lot of traffic. Got it? What I'm getting at is you see potential. What I'm getting at, what does Yaakov see in his dream? If this is Shar Shemaim, if God's up in heaven, but God speaks to man here, and there's a connection here between heaven and earth, he's saying, I don't see in the future what's going to... I'm not speaking like a prophet. He's speaking like an entrepreneur and saying, a religious entrepreneur, what a place to build a shul. Got my idea? In other words, this is an ideal spot to build a house for God. He's not making a prediction. We'll see in a minute. He's going to make a resolution. But he's aware of something. Oh, if God appeared to me here, this would be a great place to connect to God forever. Now, again, he can't do it now, but he's gonna have a dream, we'll see in a minute. A dream about doing something great, hopefully when things get better. Right? So what I might claim is when he gets up from his dream first and says, God's presence is here, this is none other than a house of God, Beit Elohim and Shar Shemaim. Because it's Shar Shemaim, I can build here a house for God. He's not stating his vision of a future. He's not saying it's a prophecy, but rather a resolution. That, it's something I wish I could do. But of course, he can't do it because he's a fugitive, as people point out already on the thing. So let's keep on reading and see what he does now in light of that. What's he do? So therefore, when he gets up in the morning, he doesn't travel at night. It's dangerous. So he gets up in the morning, and he marks the spot. So he takes the Evan that was by his head, okay? And he makes it a matzeba. Remember, Hashem nitzav alav. The word matzeba is key all through Yaakov's life. Not to mention avanim. Avanim, I'm sure you realize avanim was a key theme. Like at the end of the parsha, there are liktu avanim. Now, the medrash about all the avanim coming together and becoming one is what happens at the end of the parsha when he makes his treaty with Lavan. Remember, he tells him liktu avanim, gather stones together and put them all together. So the famous Rashi everyone knows in the beginning of the parsha is based on the closure of the end of the parsha, where it also he's Vayivga bo Malachei Elohim, Vayivga bo Makom, and Malachei Elohim. There's the parsha is like beautifully structured all the way through. But basically, he's going to do something now to mark the spot, and he puts oil on it to dedicate the point, also to know where to come back to, because oil can stay for a long time. But he anoints the place, and basically, he has in mind one day to return here. Okay, now, Yaakov is not in charge of naming cities. Remember, that wasn't his job yet. He wasn't commissioned to do that. But Vayikran Shema Makom Ahu Beit El. Notice the word again, Makom. Hope it's crystal clear how Chumash is making a big deal about the word Makom now. Calls it Beit El. He's not naming the city. He's naming his resolution to build a house there. Okay. But the name of the city was, Luz. Now later, By the time we get to when the Torah is being given, it's already known as Beit El. Now, because Yaakov wanted to build a house for God there. Okay. Now that he got everything ready, now he makes his famous neder. Got it? He says, if God will be with me. Now, what's he mean, im yeh elohim imadi? Is he questioning the existence of God? or he's questioning if God indeed will be with me like he promised. Now, if you remember what we read this morning, or no, tomorrow morning, remember, Yaakov believes in God, the question, and God will keep a promise, but is Yaakov worthy of God's help? God said, I'll be with you, remember? Maybe our avot are always worried, maybe that they're not deserving of God's promise, maybe they did something wrong. She says, if God will indeed be with me like he promised, remember, we'll see in a minute, and take care of me like he promised, okay, and give me food to drink and eat, etc., then when I come back in peace, right, from my father's to my father's house, then God will be for me a God. Now, this is one of the most difficult psukim, correct? Remember why? Because it sounds like if God helps me, he'll be my God, otherwise he won't be my God. Now we're going to go through this, what's called his neder, his vow. And the big question that the Parshanim argue over, is this a vow or a condition? I'll go through this in a minute on another sheet. But he's making a neder. It says as follows. If what? If God is with me, and if he takes care of me, and if he gives me food to drink, etc., and if he brings me back home, we'll match him up to the promise. Is this already the then or another if? Is this the same if as this? Is repeating, I've got to be with me, and then saying the same thing? Or if God's with me, then this is what I'm going to do. That'll be Ramban. It's a Rashi, Bachokat Rashi Ramban. Now this for sure is the nether. What's the problem with this Eben that he made a Matseva, that he made a monument or a marker, will be a Beit HaLukim. That's not a prediction. That's his resolution. That's my whole point. Yaakov plans to come back and build a house for God, and he's going to support it by giving 10%. One of my colleagues pointed out to me on Shabbat that in this week's Parsha, he gives everything, Esrim, Izim HaTaim, Tiasim Esrim. Now, the word Eser is either Eser or Esrim, all the way through when he sends the present to Lavan. So the Eser,
to Esav,
he gives something to Esav. Instead of giving the 10% to God, he ends up bowing down to. My friend was a bit right wing, and the right wingers like to say it's okay, it's permitted, nothing wrong with that. But you don't bow down to your enemy. No, you fight. So there's a direction in Chazal that Yaakov was punished for bowing down so many times to Esav, instead of just fighting. So he said bowing down. Who's the entity does he bow down to, and ask kapara from and things like that, and giving 10% to, is Afka Esav. Anyway, that's just all direction. It's just making a big deal about the 10%.
Except that those numbers have nothing to do with 10%.
I know, but just the word
related to percentage.
Yeah, not a percentage. I'm saying the number.
But the Gemalim have nothing to do with 10%.
I agree. I didn't say I agreed with him. I just he pointed out that was cute. That's all. Now, I disagreed with him as far as the meaning of it, but it was just cute. Okay, now I want to show you, I'll just review what we did. So basically, it's on the short sheet, you can use it later on. I'm going to take this Hidgalut, this is just my Hebrew one, I'm sorry, make it smaller. The first section I called Revelation, the first time God's, which is, leads to his realization that God is here. This is a place to build a house for God. And his realization leads to his preparation, right, for his resolution. Got it? So we're going to go from revelation to realization to preparation to resolution. That's the way I'd like to teach it. Again, that's the shir in Parshat Vayetzeh. But for our shir, what I want to show you is what led Yaakov to making this neder. To make it this house for, what's the idea of a house for God? What I want to claim is a house for God is one up on a mizbech. Mizbech that Avram and Yitzhak built to call it in God's name, that's wonderful. In other words, you have a mizbech, which means probably there's food, people gather, and he calls out in the name for God and talks about God. I can up that a level, not a sort of a temporary or a portable or a small little gathering place, but turning it into a house. Going from a mizbech, going up to a house, it's an upgrade. Something much more permanent. And therefore, Yaakov sees himself as hoping that now he's going to build a mizbech and call it in God's name, but turn it into a house for God. That's the idea I want to show you now. I want to prove it out from the Pesukim. Okay. Now, the main, in in the Galut, in the Revelation, this unique part we talked about, Yirzachah be like Afar Haaretz, and going in four directions, and that blessing, right? These two ideas of Afar Haaretz and going in four directions is unique to the specific blessing that Avram got in Beit El after Lot left. Remember, Avram returned to Beit El in chapter 13 when he came back from Egypt, and he's in Beit El, and that's when Lot leaves, and Avram stays, and then God appears to Avram after Lot left in Pasek Yodalad. So we're going to read that first. I have it over here. In Perek Yudgimel Pasek Yodalad, I'll have it here highlighted. First, I'll highlight this, and then we'll compare it. Okay? Okay. Vashem Amar El Avram, Achari Yiprei Lot Mimo. The end of chapter 13. Notice again. Sanai Necha Bin Hamakom. Here we go again. That's going to connect it, at least thematically, to Beit El, if not in Beit El itself, where you are, Asher Atasham, in all four directions. So we have four directions. That's unique to here with Avram in Beit El and Yaakov in Beit El. Only two times. Okay? The land you see, you'll get. And then, okay? If anyone can count. And that's the unique, then he says, Kumi Telech Baretz. Just for the fun of it, time out. Is there anywhere else in Chumash where we have all four directions? In Chumash. Check, see if I'll do a little thing. Anywhere in Chumash, you have all four directions.
Moshe
Rabbeinu, very good. When? In Parsha
Ben Chana. When Hashem showed him the land.
Exactly. In other words, Avram, he said, Bet Chanan, God says, it said, go, Alei Rosh HaPisgah, V'sai Necha, Yamav V'tzafon V'negba. Look in all four directions. And what did Chazal say? What's he want to say? He wants to say, what's Levanon? Remember, Ahara Tov HaZev Alvanon is the Beit HaMikdash. The rabbis are onto something there. Remember, when Chazal say, he doesn't want to see the Lebanon and the mountain. He wants to see the Beit HaMikdash built in the Midrash. But basically, it's Moshe Rabbeinu's last request to go into land. God says, you can't go into land, you can see it. But the question is, why looking four directions? Because he's an Eved Yarden. He shouldn't need to look east or north. He should just look west to see the country. But the four directions goes back to, you know, the blessing of Avram to build a house for God. Anyway, I'm trying to show you where Midrashim come from. They're always awesome. But you have to realize they're Midrashim and they're awesome. But even though they're not Pshat, but they're awesome. Now, let's go back to our point today. Oh my gosh, we're going to run out of time again. Now, if you match this up with what we had, make this smaller now. The table just shows everything here. This blessing here, the same promise, the Yaakov here, the land you're going to get on, l'chat nena l'zarecha, that's here. L'chat nena l'zarecha olam is the same as this. Got that? Afara aretz, I made it green and green to match it up. And all four directions, yama v'keba, see, like Baruch Hashem, we have color. You can check it out later on. And then v'nivruchu v'cha again, as God told Avraham Avinu, which goes back. Now Yaakov, to show you what was Yaakov's nether. So Yaakov's nether clearly is based on God's promise. And I'll be with you. Remember God said, and therefore, if God will be with me. If this here does anything means if, it could even mean when. In other words, he's not doubting God, he might be doubting himself, but he can't do it now, but as soon as the conditions are complete, he should be able to build a house for God. So therefore, I'll be with you. And then if God will be with me, Ushmarticha b'chol asher tilech perfectly matches Ushmarani b'dach shonuchu olech. All the parshanim point this out. Rashi on the spot. And I'll bring you back to this place, which is v'shapti v'shom beit avi. And the only thing that doesn't match is kilo ezavcha, because I won't abandon you. But that needs to match giving me lechem lechol begel labosh. And Rashi brings the famous connection from Narhaiti Vigam Zakanti, Loriti Tzadik Nezav Vizarav Vakesh Lachem. So he says, from Tidlim, I know that someone Nezav is someone looking for bread and food and clothing. So he says, Kilo Zavcha, Yaakov translates that as having food to eat and clothing to wear, which shows that he needs a job and he's basically going empty handed to Lavan. Now, then the question is, Vayasham Lila Lukim, is that already is that still another condition, or is that already what he's going to do? Rashi says his condition, the way Rashi understands it, that all my children will be chosen. There won't be a psul in my zera. No, it's a condition. On the condition I'm indeed chosen and all my children are chosen and the bechira process is ending, that'll be fine. Ramban says no. He says, if that happens, I'm going to dedicate my life to God. You know, he'll be my God and then I'll build him a house. Or basically Ramban says, Yaakov takes upon himself, when I come back, he'll take care of everything Yisrael needs. He says, I'll be the rabbi, v'yashem di Elohim. I'll build the structure. This Evan will become a Beit Elohim, and I'll fund the structure, I'll fund the building with my 10% from my earnings. Okay. So in a nutshell, that's, that now this week, I'm going to jump this now because now that Rabbi Jay reminded me, I'm giving the shir on Parsha this week. We'll talk about in the shir this week, why Yaakov does or doesn't fulfill the nether. In other words, we don't find Yaakov building a house for God. Is that because he doesn't keep his promise or because he still wishes he could, but there's, is that because he's lazy or because of his life circumstances he can't? That we'll talk about already in the on the shir. We don't have time for it tonight. We'll do it already tomorrow. Now we'll get to the main part for today. This will do, I mean, Thursday we'll do the Parsha shir. Now, I'm going to jump to Sefer Dvarim. Okay? And Sefer Dvarim puts everything together. Remember we just mentioned in Parsha Bet Hanan, this is already Parshat Re'eh in Moshe's speech. What's God tell them? The first speech in the Chukim Mishpatim section. Once you come to land and conquer it, what do you need? You're going to cross the Jordan River. You'll be in the land which God's giving you. Remember, and you have rest from all your enemies around you. Remember that phrase, v'nech lechem. Then, hamakom, here we go again, which God will choose to dwell his name there. See the idea about makom and shem, relating to the temple. Okay, that's where you bring all your korbanot, etc. In other words, God's saying, right now, you have a mishkan. When you settle down and you have rest from all your enemies around you, then you can build a permanent place to make God's name known. But I'm connecting between the word makom again and God's name and the idea of a temple. Hope that's clear. And now to prove it, all I need to do is read Malchut when David wants to build a house for God. Now, during the time of conquest of Yeshua and all through Sefer Shoftim, we're on the move. We haven't settled down yet. The conquest is far from complete. And the first time the conquest is close to complete, at least, if not totally complete, is in the time of King David. King David wants to reciprocate and thank God by now, first he brings the Aron to Yerushalayim. After doing that, he wants to build a house for God in Yerushalayim. David HaMelech thinks that he's fulfilled now, that Am Yisrael now is in the position the Sefer Dvarim was talking about, that we have rest from our enemies. And therefore, what's he say? Vayiki Yashav HaMelech Beveito. This is after he secures the kingdom. He captured Yerushalayim, he united all the tribes, and he brought the Aron to Yerushalayim. Okay? And therefore, Hashem Miniach Mikol Bav Misaviv. The king asked Natan HaNavi, which is, you know, connection to God. Look, I'm living in a tent. I'm living in a palace, right? But God is still living in a tent, meaning we still have only a mishkan and not a house for God. And it doesn't make sense that the king is settled down and we have a permanent palace for a king. And God still, basically, if everyone's living in caravans, the shul can be in a caravan. If everyone's building in beautiful houses, you don't put a shul in a little tent or in someone's basement. So basically, the shul should match the neighborhood you're living in. And Natan, who also knows Sefer Dvarim, first told the king, you know, God's with you. See the word, Kesha Mimach, just like right up Yaakov's Neder, right? God's with you. And Natan thinks it's a good idea, but then God tells him, not so fast, not you, but your son. I don't know the topic of why David doesn't build a Mikdash yet. Hopefully we'll get to it in a couple of minutes. But God tells Natan to tell David, right? Are you the one to build a house for God? You can read that with a question mark or with an exclamation point. But he says, basically, I haven't settled down in a home. See the word bayit now? Notice, from the time Am Yisrael left Egypt to this day, I've been going from in temporary dwellings. Basically, Am Yisrael has been on the move. Leadership has been on the move. You've noticed Sefer Shoftim, almost every Shevet has a Shofet. But God's, I guess, Shekhinah, or God's, the leadership goes from tribe to tribe. If you follow Sefer Shoftim, we go from north to south and circle around. Almost every tribe, except the rejected ones, basically, all get Shoftim. From Yehudah and Binyamin and Ephraim and Menashe and the Gilad, and then Zvulun and Naphtali. And Chatziv. It works out beautiful. And we end up in Dan with Shimshon, and then we go back to Eli. But everyone has a chance of leadership, but God's been on the move. And now David's hoping things will settle down. Okay. So God says, and because of that, I didn't ask anyone to build me a house because you weren't settled down. And therefore he says to his father, therefore go say this to David. I brought you up from the minor leagues. Okay? You used to be a shepherd and now you're a Nagid. You're a leader of my people. Here's my key point. Okay. God tells David, Ve'yeimach. Remember Yaakov's neder? Hinenochi mach. God promises, and Yaakov says, Im ye'elim imadi. But God says, I've been with you, okay, everywhere you went. Isn't that exactly what God told Yaakov? It's just so, Im ye'elim imadi. Hinenochi mach. Ushmarticha b'chol asher teilech. I'm just trying to show you the obvious connection between Hinenochi mach, and I'll guard you wherever b'chol asher teilech, and bring you back to this land. Yaakov sees himself as fulfilling Yaakov's nether. No, but David sees himself as fulfilling what Yaakov wanted to do. No? So therefore, what's God say? What's God tell him? I'm sorry. I've been with you, right? Everywhere you went. And I defeated your enemies. I've been watching over you. And I made you a great name. Now, V'asitach Hashem Gadol K'shem Agdolim. Who else did God promise this to about making a great name for you? Someone please remember. Who else did God say, I'll make your name great?
Abraham.
That's the beginning of Lech Lecha, right? Okay. But that's not the goal, but that enables making a name for God. But to make God's name great, your name has to be great. And therefore, we finally have a nation that's reached political maturity, and people look up to King David. David's famous now. His name is great. Okay. And then, Vesamti Makom, again, the word Makom again. For my nation Israel, and they're planted, and they're dwelling now in the land perfectly, and hopefully it won't get worse again, and we won't have trouble with our enemies. We're hoping we reach a time of peace, and then this is the first time God says, from the time I put leader Shoftim over my people, you have rest. You're right. You have rest from your enemies. Okay, and therefore God's telling you, before you build a house for me, I need to build a house for you, which means you have to have a successor. Your son has to take over. And therefore, he says as follows. Your time will pass and you'll have a successor. Your offspring will take up. You'll have a stable kingdom and you'll have a succession of power and your son will take over and his kingdom will be established. Then, who yivneh by nishmi? That's what I wanted to get to. That's the purpose of the house for God is for God's name. Again, I'll bring another 20 proofs of this, but the connection between a house for God, and this is God talking, the purpose of God's house is to make God's name great. In other words, I come to God's house, and this is the key point I wanted to get to in this share. The goal of a house for God is to remember why we're chosen. So when we come to God's house, we daven Pesukei Zimra, we talk about God, Hodu Lashem Kiru Bishmo. In God's house, we talk about God's name, we talk about how great he is, and how great we need to be, but we remind ourselves of not only how great God is, but our need to make his name great by how we act and how we talk. And I need to do that as a community, as a group. I need a place to gather. And therefore, the purpose of a house for God is not to feed God, not to feed him. You have to bring korbanot because that's what everyone did in ancient times. I need to have food there. You need to celebrate. But the main purpose is not to feed God or just to ask God to do something for you, but rather you go to God's house to remember why you're chosen to make a name for God. And that's why I spent so much time on it. And in case that's not clear, listen to what David tells his son Shlomo. Remember, what David does, David doesn't sit back and do nothing. David gets everything ready to build a house for God. That's a Shir and Divrei Yamim. And after David has the whole, basically a whole Lego set for Shlomo to put together, as soon as David dies, as soon as Shlomo becomes king, David got everything ready. Therefore, David tells Shlomo, my son, Ben Arvarach, that's the house that I want you to build, right? A bite. For God to make his name great, l'shem ulutifer l'chol arsot achinan alom. Therefore, David explains to Shlomo, the house you're building is for God's sake, and not just for Am Yisrael, but for all the nations, meaning it's for God's name to be known among all the nations. Okay? And therefore, David got everything ready before he died. Then he called his son Shlomo, commands him to build this house for God, and then here's everything. Okay? And David explains to Shlomo, Bini, I want to build a house for God's name, for God's reputation. God told me, your time period, right, was one of war. In other words, you're living a time period of war where people still don't, they respect you out of fear, right? But there were great wars, wars that had to be fought. It's a time for war and a time for peace. So your generation was one of war, therefore you can build a house for God. Therefore, lo tivna bayit lishmi, because I can't go international. I can't make this name of God international until people look up to you and respect you. It can't work when you're at war with your enemies. You have to wait a generation, okay? Because you're living in a time of war. Not David did anything wrong, but rather David was living in a time period where you can't go public yet with God's name. You can remind yourself with a Mishkan, but going public with a house for God has to be in a time of peace. Therefore, you're going to have a son, and to make sure he'll be a man of peace, make sure he's a man of peace. In other words, there's a time for war and a time for peace, if you remember Kohelet. I'll give him rest also from his enemies, another generation, and his name will be Shlomo. In other words, call him Shlomo. That's not a prediction. That's direction. That's make sure he'll be a son living in peace. And who you've met by it, Lishmi, he'll make a house for my name. Okay? I'll be like, okay, we have a father-son relationship. But again, on the condition, you keep build a house and make sure to use your wisdom and thought and to keep the Torah properly. And then, if you keep the Torah properly and you have a great country and a great name, and you talk about God, then the temple, we can go public with this idea of making a name for God. And this house will be known as a symbol of our connection to God, not just God working for us, but our working for God and making God's name great to the eyes of the other nations. So again, I just brought those examples. And then real quick, I'm going to run out of time. But when Shlomo actually builds the temple, he gives his famous prayer. Maybe we'll do this next week properly. Even a non-Jew coming, if they come from far away land, Laman Shemecha, for the sake of your name again. And then, because they'll hear about how great your name is, your great name, your outstretched hand, etc. They'll come to pray here as well. And then David or Shlomo prays that God should answer the prayer of the non-Jew, the stranger coming, okay? L'man yidun komet et so that all the people know your name, like we say in Aleinu, to fear you, and know that your name, et shimcha nikra al habayit hazeh. Remember, nikra b'shem Hashem? Your name is associated with this house. I think that's like icing on the cake. Just showing you how obvious this theme is. And if it wasn't obvious in Chumash, it's obvious from King David, from Sefer Shmuel, from Sefer Malachim, from Sefer Divrei Yamim, and the famous visit of Queen of Sheba we talked about last week. Nachash comes to visit, and Shlomo is famous, but everything he's doing is L'Shem Hashem. And then she sees, we talked about this week, that at the end of her visit, she sees not just the king who's great and doing well, but doing Mishpat and Tzedakah with his wealth that we talked about already last week. So let me just quickly summarize. I hope my point was clear this week. The whole point of the shir this week was to show you the deep connection between the story in Bereshit of Avraham making a name for God and the place Beit El, Yitzchak making a name for that after reaching peace with his surroundings, with the Plishtim. Yaakov wishing he could, and therefore he can't in his present situation because he's a fugitive running away. He's not married yet, doesn't have a family yet, not a living. No one's looking up to him yet. But now that God makes a promise that you are the chosen one, and I'll take care of you and bring you back, Yaakov wants to reciprocate and saying, as soon as that happens and I'm able to, my goal is to build a house for God. Now, it becomes Yaakov's dream. Again, why he doesn't fulfill it, I'll try to talk about it on Thursday night and the Parsha Shir. But the main thing I want to show you today, I hope that point was clear, that there's a direct connection between God's reputation and God's house and the stories of Avraham Avinu, Yitzhak, and why Yaakov doesn't, but he wishes he could. But not only building a mizbech, making a name for God, but even a house. And that's going to be a long-term goal for the Jewish people. And because when we go to shul, it's a mikdash ma'at, we'll see the connection. But that theme, which I'll show you probably next week in the Siddur, how often that theme comes up in our daily davening and our prayers all the time of Shem Hashem. And then we'll connect it to what happens in the rest of Sefer Bereshit. Okay, I have to apologize that I have to leave and I have a family thing I have to get to, I have to go to in a minute. So I'm going to leave on time. I mean, I'll finish on time actually this week. And Rabbi Jay, I'll leave it to you to take the, you answer any questions that people have.
Okay.
Make sure. Or
I'll
you
try.
Can disagree with it. Okay. But I have to leave. Okay, okay. Have a good week, everybody. And Jay, Rabbi Jay, take over.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Thank you very much. We want to wish Rabbi Liebtag long life. For those who weren't here right at the beginning, he has yahrzeit for his mother. So there's a family get together. So that's why he had to leave. Okay. I don't know. I have to, if Rabbi says I have to answer any questions, so I'll have to answer any questions. And if I say I don't know, I'll tell you I don't know, but I, what's here. Okay. Just, tomorrow, Yosef Lindell completes his series on the history of the Siddur. He's going to discuss how modernity has impacted on the Siddur. That's tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, of course, Dr. Shapiro, Mark Shapiro, continuing his series on Rabbi Shmuel Mohlever, and then Rabbi Shulman and Rabbi Helfgott and Shuli Mishkin and Rabbi Liebtag, Thursday night, myself, all our shiurim during the week. And we look forward to learning with you. And okay, and that's it, I think. I want to wish everybody well. Benny Gesundheit, of course, in Shiur Bivrit B'Sefer Tehillim in 45 minutes at 1 o'clock. On the blessing Yitzhak gave to Yaakov when he thought it was Esav. Okay, compare the blessings. Okay, to everybody, be well, have a wonderful day, and let's hear good news. It's like I said, it's been quite an upheaval. The world changed a lot in the last couple of days, and let's hope it's for the good. That's all we have to pray. Nobody really knows, but let's hope for good things. Okay, we look forward to learning with you. Please do invite a friend to come one of our shiurim, and we'll see you soon. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.